Sheila Rahimi and Marshall Harris bring you five topics on their minds today on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I got five on it. Number one.
Five on it here with Rahimi and Harris. It is Mark Grody. It is Marshall Harris. We got five questions for you. Question number one. What was the most surprising move the Bears made on roster cutdown day?
So we have to. So one, we can only do one?
Yeah, I think that's the, like, what was the most surprising? It's a superlative. I don't know if you know how this works. It means one's got to be above the rest.
Yeah, I got you, superlative guy. You know what I'm going to say? Relative to the beginning of the season, and I get it, he earned the spot. So in the at the end of the day, it's not necessarily surprising. But Jahdae Walker making this team is a big deal. We have seen... You have watched Bears football enough through the years, those of you listening here on the Rahimi and Harris show for sure, to know that there has been many a times when we have seen wide receivers flourish during training camp, and there have been great stories of guys, and then cut down day comes and they're like the first person cut. It's like Chicago losing the Olympics. Like, we're all excited about it, we're fascinated, infrastructure is going to be fixed, and then Chicago is immediately dismissed from contention. That's what usually happens. Like, I was a little surprised that Walker still made it as a sixth wide receiver, by the way, on this team. So I will say Walker as my surprise, and an honorable mention, and maybe this is personal, and I think it's personal for a lot of people. Doug Kramer did not survive. Now, he might come back on the practice squad. Doug Kramer is my U of I guy. Last year, Dan Weeder and I, co-host on the Take the North podcast, were in an elevator at Soldier Field heading up, and two older people got onto the elevator, and they said, "Oh, it's Mark Grody." And it was Doug Kramer's grandparents, and I have Dan Weeder as my witness. They are fans of The Score. They are fans of me, and so I am a fan of Doug Kramer. It's a family thing.
Did they
Marshall.
Say Bears? Did they police say? Did police tell me they said Bears?
I don't necessarily remember that. I might have said Bears, but they were very, very excited.
He did the bit.
He said it
in real life.
He said it again. So shout out to Doug Kramer. Shout out to Cubs. Doug Kramer's grandparents.
White
Hope
Sox.
You're all doing well.
Bears. All right, so that's yours.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the fact that Karan Amagaji is still on this team, because I wasn't sure. Ryan Poles has had some issues, and I was like, is this going to be the dagger on Ryan Poles? Like, not a dagger that kills him, but a dagger that certainly makes us go, huh, Ben Johnson wasn't a fan of that Karan Amagaji thing. So, but they're giving time for a second-year player to develop. And I guess it goes in concert with, I was wondering if Theo Benedet was for real. And the fact that he's off the practice squad now on the 53-man roster means he's for real. But it also means that one of Poles' guys that was very questionable is going to get a chance. Although, I don't know that he's ever going to play tackle again for the Bears. He may just be a guard for the Bears and an emergency tackle.
The Tevin Jenkins plan?
And so that's concerning, right? Because you drafted him in the third round as a tackle.
However, the Tevin Jenkins, what, second round pick? Drafted to be the replacement, essentially, to Charles Leno Jr. They moved him inside and he thrived. So, I mean, like...
But you need tackles.
That wasn't the idea.
But you need tackles.
You're right. It's default. There's no doubt.
Default's not good.
No.
When you're talking about Ryan Poles and his track record, and I a year from now, I'm interested to see how many 2023 and 2022 players there are still left on this roster. Let me tell you, it won't be many.
real quick, low key, before we get on to the next question. I was a little surprised Ian Wheeler was cut. Now, he might make it back to the practice squad, I would imagine. But
I think that's what's going to happen.
I just like what I see out of him in terms of the speed factor. So, so he could be back. Who did we have earlier that's back with the Bears?
I know that JP Richardson.
Thank you.
JP Richardson, he's on the practice squad.
There you go. See, there's the example of the wide receiver who was good in camp that everybody kind of liked early on, and they couldn't cut him fast enough. But they bring him back.
But it faded. It faded quickly.
It did, actually.
Richardson.
It's a great point.
Five on it. Number two.
Is there a chance Braxton Jones isn't the Bears' starting left tackle?
So you're saying there's a chance? Yeah, of course there's a chance. they could determine that Braxton Jones isn't where he needs to be from a recovery from the injury. That sound you got with him in the locker room really told me a lot about where he is and where he thinks he is. And of course, he's basically saying, guys, it's not like I'm not trying out here, but I've been dealing with this, that, and the other.
It's like this and like that? Is that what you're saying?
And like that, Anna.
Uh-huh.
Yes. So, yes, I could see a possibility of him not starting, but I expect him to start because Ozzie Trapillo, not that he's been a disappointment, but they may have put a little too much dip on their proverbial chip in terms of what expectations were for week one as a rookie who played almost all of his college football at Boston College at right tackle and expecting him to be able to just quickly convert to left tackle. It did not work out that way.
Yeah, and again, I give the Bears credit for that, even though it kind of sucks that the rookie, the guy that drafted in the second round, is for now out of the competition at left tackle. But I appreciate the fact that the Bears have been real about it and not tried to force anybody in because of where they were drafted and who they are. Here's what I think. I think Braxton Jones will be the starting left tackle, but they, and this is kind of like reading between the lines, they're saying if it ain't good enough, then be ready for plan two, which appears to be Theo Benedict. I'm trying to figure out how far.
Is. I think it is.
How far are they taking this Theo Benedict thing? And are they, is the, are they actually considering the possibility? Because, I mean, we have to consider that because they did not want to name the starter yesterday. I think that was because they don't want to give the satisfaction to the players right now because they have not, nobody has done good enough. So I don't think they wanted to be like, yep, Braxton Jones is our guy. I think they're going to do it in a much more low-key fashion, and we'll find out 24 hours before the game that Braxton Jones is a starting left tackle.
Nah, see, I disagree with that. I don't think we're going to find out 24 hours before the game because I think once game plan for Minnesota starts, you're going to see with your own eyes who's out there with the first team, and I don't think that player is going to rotate in the week of the game.
Yeah.
You need the real reps leading up to a game, and I think whoever is out there at left tackle, and I expect it fully to be Braxton Jones, is going to get the week one start. But I think you are right in saying no one deserves the satisfaction this far out of being named the starter. I'll say this, their attempt to get Ozzie Trapillo to play left tackle coming out of college, it's very much like when you see a garbage can and you've got a wadded up paper player, wadded up piece of paper, and you yell Kobe and you let that thing fly and it hits off the front of the rim, does not go in. Now you go back, you get it, you pick it up and you put it in the trash can. They yelled Kobe, the wad did not go in the trash can, but now they're trying to pick it up and gently put,
haven't we been told to avoid Marshall's analogies? Isn't that in the show?
Yeah,
open?
Guess what, they're coming anyway, full speed ahead
with slobber. Yeah. With slobber.
Yeah, that was an analogy as well.
Number three.
Question number three of five on it. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris, third question.
Uh-huh.
Listener, what is the least amount of wins the Bears can have in order to have a successful season?
Oh, look at your face.
I know. I know. Well,
you just told me a few segments ago, you said something about the number five.
Okay. I'll say the least amount of wins the Bears could have this year to remain successful. The reason that I'm pausing here is because I have to go with my initial statement from the beginning of the show, and that is, to me, a successful season is knowing that you have the quarterback, which was the measure last year for me, too. That was how I evaluated the Chicago Bears last year, too. Do you know at the end of the season that you have a quarterback that's going to be around for the next 7 to 10 years and hopefully for his entire career? So I think I would be okay with 6 wins if I know.
Ooh,
that.
You're comfortable with that?
I know. Well, you guys are, look, it is by nature, it is a cynical question, which is not going to elicit many optimistic answers, right? We're talking about what is the least amount of wins the Bears can have this year, right? So I will say it. 6, if I know that the quarterback is going to be good. I would doubt that the Bears would only win 6 games if the quarterback is good, though.
Going back to that opening thesis, it's not just about the quarterback. I need to know that he is the franchise quarterback. I also need to know that the head coach can coach, as in head coach, not just offensive play caller.
Oh, you don't like Ben Johnson?
Nope, that's not what I said. And see, here you go.
I wrote that down. It's on record.
Start in trouble.
Put that down in five on it for tomorrow.
I think the two are intertwined, and I think there's a possibility that success means more than 6 wins because Ben Johnson should be able to get him a win or two. Like, my whole thing is this. First four games, win two games. Find a way. Just find a way to win two of the first four games, no matter how bad your team looks. Other teams will be going through growing pains as well. First-time head coach in Dallas, correct?
Yes.
You have a new head coach in Las Vegas. You have a new starting quarterback in Minnesota. You have a team missing both of its coordinators in Detroit. All these teams have different problems. They're different than your problems, but you got to find a way to take advantage of their problems in a better way than they take advantage of your problems. So, in my opinion, six is a good number. I would say seven.
Okay.
And it's more so, regardless of how they start, they need to have more wins than losses in the back eight. I don't know if you've seen the back eight. It's not easy. But they got to have, or you know what? Strike that. 500 in the back eight.
I have a question for you guys.
Yeah.
Let's say you Addendum. Guys went on a 18-week coma. You guys were in an 18-week coma. You wake up at the end of the year. You find out the Chicago Bears are in the playoffs. Are you surprised?
You know what? I'm not blown away. I'm not. I mean, like, yeah, surprised. Yes, a little bit surprised, of course. Based on everything that we've seen, everything we know, I would be a little surprised, but not blown away.
I would not be surprised just because of the nature of the division and so many teams have so many question marks. I will be a lot less surprised if they start out 2-2 than if they start out 1-3. I know that's just one game, but I think it makes all the difference, especially going into that bye week, to know exactly where you are, what progress have you made from game one to game four, and then, of course, how you play out of the bye in that big game against Jaden Daniels and the Washington Commanders. The first 4 to 5 games are going to set this whole thing up. They're going to be out of the playoff race possibly by week five. That's where it is. You've got to find a way to be at least 2-3 after 5 weeks. If you're not 2-3, ain't no way. Because that two-city tandem on the road,
Baltimore-Cincinnati,
come on, man.
You think they're going to get swept in that
I don't think they're necessarily going to get swept.
They're going to win one of those games.
I can't wait to get to that point in the season and see if you still feel the same way.
If we're all high on Ben Johnson, he's got a game plan away to beat one of those two teams. They've got to. Got to
have a coach.
That's right.
Number four. Transitioning to Cubs, Colin Ray goes against the Giants today. Are you a believer?
Am I a believer in Colin Ray? You know what? I have been so pained by this question because I've been the one that advocated when the starters got healthy, being Javier Assad, and Jameson Taillon, that he needed to go back into a bullpen swingman role. But all this man does is go out there and give you a chance to win. He hasn't given up more than 2 runs in any of his last 4 starts. They need him today just so they can bounce back and not lose the series against the Giants. And I'm not a believer in Colin Ray long term, but I'm a believer in Colin Ray in the moment. He's been a guy who has just simply been able to keep you around. And that's what a fifth starter should be on most staffs, even the best teams, teams going to the playoffs. The fifth starter is rarely a world beater. Colin Ray has not been a world beater, but he has certainly beaten whatever the expectations were for his season to start. So, yes, I'm a believer in Colin Ray in this role as a fifth starter.
Does it kind of blow you away when you – I know none of us likes wins anymore, but he's 10-5 with a 3.96 ERA, which – you're right. That's outstanding for a fifth starter.
He's got the lowest ERA he's had at any point in his 7-year career.
Yeah, that looks good. Like, I mean, you look at that. You're like, yeah, if you didn't know anything about him or his age or anything, you'd be like, yeah, I'd sign that guy as my third or fourth starter in a rotation. So, yeah, again, relative to fifth starter. And you're right. You don't want that guy being necessarily starting games
in the playoffs.
In the postseason. Right. I mean, I wouldn't be afraid of him coming out of the bullpen if he's on the playoff roster. So yeah. Now, his last game against Milwaukee, they did win his game, but he got away with 5 walks. Against the Crew.
Or he pitched around 5 walks. He navigated having runners on the base paths.
Man, boy, you are really being nice there. Navigating 5 walks?
He gave up 2 runs.
I know.
If you go 5 2/3 and you only give up 2 runs, walk 8 guys.
That's a stressful way to go through life, though, man. And he's a veteran. I don't believe that Colin Ray is out here conceding bases. I don't think. But your guy, you know, We talked about Javier Assad. Javier Assad was really good. And I've been hard on him, man.
For no reason, also.
Well, just because, here's why I'm hard on Javier Assad. And maybe this isn't fair because we had a pitcher here who was one of the greatest Cubs ever, and Kyle Hendricks, who didn't have velocity. I just get scared when, and the type of pitcher Assad is, he is a get in trouble. Getting in a lot of trouble,
and then
he gets out of it. But it always feels lucky, and he wasn't getting away with it in his first start back. That's for sure. But he was good. He was good. I don't dislike Javier Assad. He just makes me nervous. But 6 innings, 1 run, 2 hits, 72 pitches, and the 3-2 win over the Angels on Friday. So good for Javier.
5 on it. Number 5.
Last question here on 5 on it. It's always a life question. Yesterday's you guys helped me get jacked. So I have another hobby that I want to pick up. And here's the question. What's the number one life skill you need to learn before you kick the bucket? Mark Grody, Marshall Harris.
Funny, I was thinking about this just yesterday without even knowing that this would be one of the questions. Yesterday was Tuesday, right?
Yes.
So I do a little bit of extra work outside of the building. I work at a hospital, and a lot of my patients, my patients are Spanish. And I took 2 years of Spanish in high school. I retained a decent amount of it, but I want to learn the whole language. I want to get that Rosetta Stone thing, and I want to be able to speak Spanish fluently. So that is that a life skill?
Yeah, 100% to learn a language.
That's
to
a learn language skill. Is definitely
to learn a language. So I would like to learn Spanish and be able to communicate in that language at all times. So that is exactly what I would like to be able to do.
Let me tell you something. Yours folds in perfectly to what I'm about to say because it's definitely under the umbrella. The number one life skill you need to learn before you kick the bucket is learn how to connect with people.
What?
Learn how to connect with people.
Are you taking shots at Robbie's, Tyler and Robbie's generation right now?
No. Listen to what I'm saying. Okay. This is,
how do I reach?
Regardless of age, I know people older than me.
Call somebody?
Connect with people. When I say connect with people, understand where they're coming from. Understanding that you have to have a certain level of emotional intelligence to be able to empathize with others. Because I think empathy is something that's been on life support for a while here.
Yeah.
Learn to understand the value of community. And that's really what this is. You know, my dad told me when I was, I think, like 12 or 13 years old, he's like, listen, you know, and it's kind of a variation of the people won't remember like who you are and they won't remember your titles, but they always remember how you made them feel. My dad told me the only thing that matters, not whether you have money or not, not whether you amassed all these riches, like your relationships are the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
Relationships are the only thing that matters. So you just have to learn how to connect with people to make sure that you have valid relationships in your life with whoever, with strangers, with family, with friends. Make sure you can make yourself available. Make sure you can anticipate the needs of the people closest to you and try to make the world a better place by connecting with others. If you can't connect with others, It's gonna be a tough run.
You guys feel good about yourselves now for making fun of Marshall?
Yeah,
you guys feel all right now?
Well,
after
mine's
that?
The piano, so not as important as.
Oh
as
yeah, yeah. After all that,
stop,
by the way,
stop asking these life questions.
By
you
the
don't
way,
want life answers.
Marshall, real quick, beautifully said. Honestly, like earnestly, I have nothing else to say. Robbie and Tyler, what are life skills?
Yeah,
I want to know.
The piano. I need to learn how to learn the piano. I've never done a cartwheel in my life. Kind of want to learn how to do a cartwheel.
Well, if you get jacked and go to yoga as well, you'll be doing cartwheels in no time.
My niece does cartwheels, and she did the splits recently, and she broke her butt. Tyler, what's yours?
Baby T wants to take everybody's life lessons into hand. I don't have one myself.
So learning is a life lesson.
Learning,
I think that's
learning
perfect.
Everybody.
Perfect.
Third person baby T.
Yeah, I was not expecting
the
third
Tyler
person.
What does Tyler want?
Oh, man. Is that it? Is that it for
yeah,
five,
that's
on it.
It? 5
on it? Let's see what we have coming up next. Oh, we have Caitlin Sharkey coming up next from GN Sports, from WGN TV. Caitlin Sharkey to talk about the Chicago Bears. She spends a lot of time out at Hallis Hall, so she's always got great insight. Don't be Anthony Heron. Don't be singing while I'm talking here. You know I've had to straighten
it's
him out.
Background music.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just so used to being traumatized by Big Ant. He's Marshall Harris. I'm Mark Grody. I'm in for Layla on the Raheemian Harris Show on The Score.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris, Rahimi and Harris. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
There are some tenets that we feel strongly about as a coaching staff, more so in how we play the game and less so about the skill set of the players we have around us. I feel strongly about our coaches. They're really good at what they do. They've got a right mix of experience, and we're going to draw the best of them, and we're going to put them in good positions to succeed. So there are no particular skill set requirements that we need. We got some good, talented players, and really the objective is to win, and it's to win now.
That's Bears head coach Ben Johnson. Win now always sounds good to me. It is the Rahimi and Harris Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I'm Mark Grody, in for Layla Rahimi today, who shall return on Monday. Before we get to our next Bears guest, let me just tell you this, that per Brad Biggs, and we've been talking all sorts of Bears here today, the Bears have claimed a couple of players off waivers, including a name you will know, that is cornerback Jalen Jones, who played with the Bears from 22 to 24. They also signed linebacker DeMarco Jackson. Per Biggs, Jones was claimed from Arizona and Jackson from New Orleans. And then again, Biggs says that they will have to make a corresponding moves to create space for Jones and for Jackson.
Also, they're loading up that practice squad. We talked about J.P. Richardson, yeah, the wide receiver signing earlier. Also, they're expected to, according to Brad Biggs, re-sign Tano Passanio to the practice squad. He's got experience, of course, playing for the defensive coordinator Dennis Allen, and of course it gives some depth at the position with Austin Booker right now sidelined.
Let's keep the Bears talk rocking with one of our favorite people. She does a lot. She works for WGN TV as a sports anchor, co-host of GN Sports every night on WGN, a reporter for WGN News as well. She is Caitlin Sharkey, and she joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa Sports app today. Shark, how are you?
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you. I'm doing well, pulling into Hallis Hall, preparing for this last practice before it flips into, week one game prep mode.
All right, so you were out there yesterday, right, Caitlin?
I was.
Okay, so I want your perspective on this. What's going on at running back?
I mean, it was wild to see just one true running back out on the field. I will say, I don't think I've ever seen that covering the NFL, right? You at least have two guys out there. But, DeAndre Swift kind of laughed it off and said, yeah, that's the first time in my career as well. I think it was very telling that Ryan Poles said, the practice stays the next few days will look a little different, meaning we should see back Roschon Johnson and Kyle Manunga. If they were that concerned about it, obviously they know they can't prepare for a season or week one with one healthy running back and a DJ Moore doing all of that stuff. So I think it's one of those situations where Ryan Poles didn't seem too concerned. If he was, they're going to go out and get some help.
Caitlin, we were just talking about this, and Marshall was really imposing it as we were talking about the Minnesota game, and Marshall was talking about how they're going to run, and establish that run to get to the play action. And I don't know how successful it's going to be early on in the season, but Caitlin, it sure does feel like in the last couple of practices, like the last training camp practice last week on fields 1 and 2, where we've seen a lot of DeAndre Swift. DeAndre Swift was very good in the preseason game the other night. Is that what it's going to be early on, do you think? Like a lot of dependence on the running game, which doesn't have great depth at this very second?
Yeah, which is, I think, the unfortunate part when you're looking at, they're going to lean on the run to start, and wait, how many backs do they have available right now?
Right.
So I think, obviously, this is going to be a huge season for DeAndre Swift, and if anyone knows DeAndre Swift and his potential, it's certainly Ben Johnson. So I think it's a combination, too. Like, if you want to run the ball really well, your offensive line needs to be pretty shored up as well. So I think when you look at the combination of, who's going to be healthy, who's going to be available, what type of back, what type of how does DeAndre Swift look in Ben Johnson's offense? That's going to placate a lot to it. Also, that offensive line. If the offensive line, they figure out what they want and who they want where, I think that'll be pretty telling, because if that's what they want to do, and I think it is what they want to do, especially early on, I think we're going to see them running the ball a lot.
Yeah, I'm trying to get people, Caitlin Sharkey joining us from WGN, the co-host of GN Sports. I'm trying to get people, Caitlin, to accept the fact that this is going to be a work in progress well into the regular season, specifically with the quarterback, Caleb Williams. Now, the good thing is they've got Ben Johnson to figure out how to make up the difference between where Caleb Williams is now and where they want him to be.
Right, and I think that's going to be his most important and valuable asset. Caleb Williams' most valuable asset going into year two is Ben Johnson, because Ben Johnson can see it clearly what Caleb needs to do. I think, like you said, Marshall, it's a work in progress. None of these offensive players have come up to the podium or spoke to us, you know, after practice and go, yeah, we're ready, let's rock, week one is just here. Like, no, they're all like, this is a work in progress, there's going to be some ups and downs, which I think is also important to say as a member of that offense, to be like, okay, don't come out and say, you know, we're going to go up and hang 38 points week one and expect it to look a certain way. I think for Caleb Williams, it's just running and doing what Ben Johnson needs you to do. It can't be Caleb Williams needs to run for his life, play hero ball, play backyard football. Like, that's just not going to work for Ben Johnson or Ben Johnson's offense. And I think that's going to be the most valuable lesson to start while they get all these kinks worked out and really truly hone in this offense. Caleb Williams has to do exactly what Ben Johnson wants him to do and envisions him to do in order for this offense to work.
Kayla, how do you interpret the Bears' reluctance, and I guess specifically Ben Johnson's reluctance to name the starting left tackle?
I mean, I kind of read it as a little bit of annoyance.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you know, he's going up there like, yeah, this is a frustrating question. I should probably know who my starting left tackle is. But I also think Ben Johnson and his coaching staff, and that's part of this culture shift up here, and we saw that a little bit with the cuts that they made as well. There's no more like, well, this is the position that he played, so let's give it another run, and that should be good enough. Like, that's not how Ben Johnson operates. So I think when he says, I'm not ready to name a starter, is because he hasn't watched anyone on tape consistently enough at left tackle to go, that's my guy. And I think if he did see that, he would go out there and be like, Braxton Jones is our starting left tackle. Like, he wouldn't hesitate, and he's not trying to play. And people are saying, okay, there's game strategy involved. Maybe I don't think it's that situation. I think he's probably frustrated that there is no secure starting left tackle, but still a work in progress with less than 2 weeks to go.
Yeah, and you know what, Caitlin, I'll run this by you too. I don't think Ben Johnson wanted to give the player, whoever it is, the satisfaction of being named, because then they would be like, yep, he earned it, he got it, and they've made it real clear nobody has stepped up. I think it's going to be Braxton Jones, but I don't think they wanted to give him the satisfaction, Caitlin.
Right. They don't want to say, okay, Braxton, this is your job. Braxton should have known going into this season, period, that this was his job to lose and this was his starting spot to lose. And then when they drafted Ozzie Trapillo, he was definitely put on notice, like, okay, here you go, Braxton. Again, this is your job to lose. But I think Braxton, I think them understanding this coaching staff coming in, understanding what Braxton Jones maybe needs and maybe needs to be coached a certain way when it comes to consistency and things like that. So, yeah, that was a very strategic message of like, I don't know, I'm not ready to name a starting left tackle. Because if I'm Braxton Jones, I'm going, oh, coach doesn't think I'm the starting left tackle just yet, in a public setting at least.
Caitlin Sharkey joining us from WGN Sports, the co-host of GN Sports. She's on that Bears beat hard, as she should be, as we are just days away from the season opener, Monday Night Football against the Vikings. What up with Jalen Johnson? My partner says he is definitely going to be out there week one. Do you agree?
I think he's
going
to be out there week one.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I hope you're right. I think it's been certainly a different looking secondary, and Ryan Poles, you know, named that group, and so that was one of the areas where he was kind of like, okay, well, no one's been healthy at the same time. We've never had our secondary out there throughout camp for at the same time. I mean, a couple weeks ago when Jalen was going through his pregame, you know, workout, so to speak, before the Bills game, I mean, I thought from my lens, I'm like, okay, he's moving well, he's making cuts, he's got his speed. But there's obviously a reason that he's not ready to go, and when it comes to pushing your, you know, Pro Bowl corner, you want to be very careful with it. But I think it is telling that he, you know, he's not starting on IR. They want him to be out there for week one, and if anyone's going to try to make it happen, it's going to be Jalen Johnson. It's just a matter of how cautious they want to play it. I'm hopeful that if he's not out there week one, he's there at week two.
Yeah, and I was saying it at the beginning of the show. I can't imagine that on Monday Night Football with Justin Jefferson, right? And we think he might even be traveling. He's got to play, right?
Yeah, I mean, and if the medical staff doesn't want to clear him, they don't want to clear him. That's one thing. But I think if it's when I talked to him this offseason, you know, this is one of the games he had circled on his calendar. You know, he's like, I'm going up against some crazy good receivers this season, starting week one. So there's certainly a lot of buzz around week one, and I think he's going to be out there if he's able and medically cleared to be.
I'm back to he's playing. He's playing.
Good job, Caitlin.
Were you surprised at all, Caitlin, that Karan Hamagaji made the team and they're talking about tucking him in inside now potentially? And were there any other surprises for you of guys that got cut or guys that made the team?
I think I wasn't surprised that Karan's still around. I think obviously it's very easy to look at it and be like, he was definitely on the roster bubble. But I think when it comes to offensive line, they need all the depth that they can get, and not sure that Karan Hamagaji has been an answer at any position for them. But at this point, they need backups. They need depth. So I'm not surprised there. I think it was time to move on from Tyler Scott. I think it was a couple seasons maybe too long that Tyler Scott was able to be part of this team. But I think that didn't surprise me. I just think it's awesome that Jahdae Walker is, you know, now part of this initial 53. And it's really cool to see him kind of – those are the stories that you love about a training camp. But not surprised that Karan Hamagaji is here for now.
All right, we're going to let you go, Caitlin, because I don't know where you are. Are you at the Abbott Lab parking lot? Are you back on campus? Because I know you
We are back on campus. Okay. No more like half-mile walk to the front door. So we're it's only like three-quarters of a mile. You know.
All right.
Still going to get those steps, though, because it ain't exactly a short walk all the way around and through. And
no doubt. Well, tell everybody in the room I said hello, Caitlin. Thank you.
I will do that. You are missed.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thanks so much, Caitlin.
That is
talk to you guys later.
Bye, Caitlin. That is the great Caitlin Sharkey. And you should follow her on Twitter. Do it right now. Do it right now. Follow her on X or Twitter. Whatever makes you comfortable. At K Rose Sharkey. Coming up next on the Rahimi and Harris Show with me, Mark Rohde, filling in for Layla Rahimi. We're gonna talk more Cubs, and we're gonna get pretty specific. Actually, we're going crosstown, baby. Crosstown. We're going to talk about we're going to compare and contrast two very successful rookies for the Cubs and the White Sox.
Yeah, I want to know what people think as far as who's having a better second half. It's a couple of rookies, one from the Cubs, one from the White Sox. Debate. That's when Rahimi and Harris, Mark Grody, and Falela returns on 670 The Score on Odyssey and the iHeartRadio app.
You're listening to Rahimi and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
The 1-2, it's in there for strike three. Oh! Trout caught looking. Strikes out for the third time. Now that's something you don't see very often.
Montgomery down the line in left field. And this one goes off the foul pole. Unbelievable run that Colson Montgomery is on right now. Four straight games with a home run. Everything he touches is gone.
Rahimi and Harris on The Score. I'm Mark Grody in for Layla. Highlights courtesy of us, The Score and CHSN. Highlights of Cade Horton and Colson Montgomery of the White Sox. Colson has been great. Cade Horton has been great. Let me just, before we get to this, I'm going to let you cook, Mr. Harris. But I see here that this is a big deal for Luther Burden of the Bears.
Oh, what's going on?
He has a number change for this is, write this down in your program. Not just Robbie. Robbie, you write it down, but everybody needs to write this down just for your sake. He was number 87. He is now, Luther Burden III is now number 13. Jahdae Walker is now number 10. Why I say this is so important is because Burden hated being number 87. He did not like being the Moose and Muhammad. He did not like being Tom Waddle, which is insulting to me, but I understand.
Wait, why is that insulting to you? Just because of your nostalgia?
Yeah, just my nostalgia. In. The Waddle part, anyway.
You just want to give people numbers.
Moosen never really lived up to his contract either when he was with the Bears. And he did say this: the Bears is where wide receivers go to die. But I just thought that was interesting. He is number 13 going forward.
Okay. Well, that's great. Speaking of 13, that's how many home runs Colson Montgomery had before last night's game.
Yeah.
Now he's got 14. And it's crazy because the White Sox lost that game, which is another discussion. Historic meltdown by the White Sox, and I don't know what's going on with Grant Taylor, but maybe they need to take a step back with him as they did maybe with Colson Montgomery earlier in the season. But Colson Montgomery is giving you a reason to pay attention to the White Sox more closely than we ever thought we'd have a reason to pay attention to the White Sox. He has been simply on fire. He's the youngest player in White Sox history to now homer in four games in a row. And the tear that he has been on, 14 home runs since the All-Star break, makes me think that we've gone from, do we have a core player for the White Sox future in Colson Montgomery, to do we have a budding superstar on our hands for the White Sox? In that same vein, Cade Horton had a very ho-hum first half of the season with the Cubs. He was called up. Had to get an opener in his first start, and he had done well enough. But he has been absolutely lights out since the second half started.
Except for the blister game.
Except for the blister game. You love hanging the blister game over his head, right?
I did it.
Questions. Yeah. Did he go on the IL after the blister game?
He did not.
Did he make his next start?
6 shutout innings against the Angels. He did.
3 hits, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts. Has he looked the part of future ace for the Chicago Cubs?
God, I don't know if I'm ready to go there yet. Has he looked the part of an ace? I mean,
ace
is not something you just throw around. You know what I mean?
Let me hit you with this.
But I've been wrong before, Justin Steele.
Let me hit you with this. The man has made 7 starts since the All-Star break. He has given up 2 runs in 37 innings. In those 37 innings, he has given up 18 hits. He has walked 11. That's a whip. A walks and hits to inning pitch of .784 while striking out 8.3 batters per 9 innings. An ERA of .49. Over 7 starts. That's like a smaller sample size, but when you think about it, that's pretty much a fifth of a season. A little more than.
Is an ace sample.
So if that's an ace sample, the conversation becomes, from where we were at the All-Star break with the Cubs and where we were at the All-Star break with the White Sox, do we have 2 guys who have had not only unbelievable seasons, but seasons that lead us to believe they could be superstars for each of their respective squads? And really the bigger question is, who's having a better second half?
Oh, wow, man, that is good. Look, they're both former first-round picks, right? Colson Montgomery and Cade Horton. So it's not crazy to think that the talent from which they come, the stock from which they come, that these guys will be really good for a long time on their respective teams. I guess I'm just not ready to anoint either at this point. When I say that, like, Cade Horton is the starting pitcher for the Chicago Cubs, but where he is exactly in the rotation, say 5 years from now, I can't quite call it. And I've said this to you before, and I know you'll shoot it down again. I am still trying to figure out how to better define what an ace is in Major League Baseball these days, especially when somebody is growing into it because of how starting pitchers are handled. To no one's fault, to none of the pitchers' fault, that managers get to the bullpen faster these days. Pitchers pitch between 5 and 7 innings, 5, 6, whatever. Like, it feels like every day we're looking at a line of last night, Matthew Boyd, 5 1/3 innings pitched. Jameson Taillon on Sunday, 5 innings. Javier Saad, 6 innings in his start. Cade Horton, 6 innings. I don't know, man. I mean, like, don't we have to see guys go deeper before we even come close to calling them an ace? Because bad things can happen after 5 1/3, after 6 innings, after 6 1/3. This is why I hesitate with Cade Horton.
All right,
just
let's start.
Little bit.
Let's start. Okay. Is Paul Skenes an ace?
Absolutely.
Okay. Paul Skenes has made 27 starts this season. How many times do you think Paul Skeens has pitched more than six innings?
I don't know.
But like, what would be appropriate for what you just defined as having to see a guy go deeper into games?
Well, how many times has he started?
27.
27 starts?
27 starts. So based on that, the only reason I bring this up is because of what you just laid out.
Yeah. So you're asking me how many times
has he gone more than six innings? Because you just laid out as like a barometer.
Yeah. So how many times is he going to, in 27 starts, I'll say 16.
Or four.
Okay. Okay. I mean, point taken.
So
yeah.
I'm going by what you're telling me. He went seven innings his last time out. It was against the Rockies.
So wait, four times?
I'm about to give it to you. He went seven innings his last time out against the Rockies. And he gave up three hits. He struck out seven. It was the Rockies. I want to point that out. You got to go all the way back to June 8th, the last time he went more than six innings. He went 7 2/3 against the Phillies in a 2-1 win. He gave up two hits, struck out seven. The start before that, he went eight innings. And then one previous start before that, he went eight innings. That's the only time this season that he's gone more than, excuse me. Oh, I missed one. He had a start back in April. So
maybe he's not an ace?
No, I think he is, but I think it goes back to what you said about redefining what an ace is.
Yeah, well, when you see it, you know it was Skeens, though. You know what I mean? That's a different one. And well said, well laid out. We know what Paul Skeens does. His stuff is just straight up overpowering, dominating, all of that kind of stuff. So I look at that as a little bit different in that case.
I think the thing you have to understand is they're playing with kid gloves when they look at Cade Horton because he hasn't pitched this many innings. So they have to monitor start to start.
Absolutely.
And so, maybe that you have to wait until they take the kid gloves off to be able to say
that's kind of it. That's kind of, and I've heard people around town saying, no doubt he's an ace. Ron Coomer said it on the air that he thinks he's going to be an ace someday. And he knows a whole hell of a lot more about pitching and baseball than I do. So I'm here for it. I'm allowing for the possibility of it. I'm just not going to proclaim that at this point. Coming up next, though, we are going to talk more Cubs. And I heard something yesterday from Nico Horner on the afternoon show with Lawrence and, who was in yesterday? Anthony Heron. Big Ann Heron with Anthony Heron.
Background music. I can't believe you didn't identify him from the background music.
That's right. Yeah, just singing through everything. Just nonstop singing away. You know, Big Ann, if you want to be a singer, go be a singer for crying out loud. But coming up next, Nico Horner said something about, which I thought he just nailed it. Specifically playing for the Chicago Cubs is what he was talking about, but it goes for all of our teams in Chicago and the microscope people are under in the third largest, I like to think of it as the second largest sports market, just because it's a better sports market than Los Angeles in terms of the attention that the teams get. You're not buying that?
Oh, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm just 100%. Processing.
Okay, I got you. So I want you guys to hear what Nico Horner has to say next. We'll talk more Cubs coming up. It is Rahimi and Harris on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. We're live from Chicago, talking Chicago sports. Listen on your radio or through the Odyssey app. AUDACY. We are 670 The Score. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
Hey, Score listeners, for all station contest rules, go to 670thescore.com/rules and good luck.
This segment is sponsored by Grand Appliance. Shop the Labor Day sale at Grand Appliance for Bosch dishwashers starting at just $7.99 and up to $4,000 back on select packages. Learn more at grandappliance.com or your local showroom. That's Grand Appliance, appliance experts since 1930.